Coming to you live from St. Louis, Missouri.
It's the Faster Freedom Show.
With your hosts, Sam Prim and Lucas Wolf.
We talking about freedom?
Hello and welcome to the Faster Freedom Show. My name is Sam.
And I'm Lucas.
And Lucas, we have a special episode today. Do you want to tell everybody why?
Because it's on the back end of Freedom Fest.
Yes, we just got done hosting Freedom Fest. We had about 65 investors in our office for 2 days. And now we are just concluding that. And we are doing a little special episode in front of some of the people that hung around. We got most people are gone, but we probably got 10 people.
I bet they can make some noise for us, too. You ready? Ready? Woo! Go!
Turn that up in post if we can, too. Yeah. It probably was loud, but you never know. I don't know.
It's plenty loud.
I don't know how far.
And it gets me back to when we shot the podcast in a different location for like 30 episodes in a row because we had a mobile studio. So this is kind of like a mobile studio.
It is a little bit like a mobile studio. We are on a stage that is mobile as well.
Mobile. Yeah, we had all of our community members up on this stage, and I was about 50-50 whether it was going to collapse or not.
Wow, that's I was not quite 50-50. I was like maybe like 5% it would collapse.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But I just thought if we fall 2 feet, we're going to be fine, right?
Yeah, we'd be fine. So why don't you talk a little bit about the last couple of days, and then that'll get into our topic today. What we're going to talk about is the last part of Freedom Fest. We talked about the top issues that people are having getting into the game, and we're going to go over them and try to dissect and give some advice to the people here as well as people listening.
Man, we talked so many things, real estate investing. I'm going to do it a little differently and kind of lean on our team right here, and I would love for you guys to let me know your favorite part of the last 2 days, your favorite topic or subject or speaker. Who wants to start? Somebody's got to start. Morgan, we'll start with Jeff. There we go. Yeah, that's a good one. Our business coach and personal development coach, Mike Kitko, talked about the difference between friends and allies and how he wants to collect allies and support each other. He doesn't need any more friends. And he also talked about survival versus creation mode and how to make that switch a little bit. He only had about 15 minutes, so couldn't get too deep, but that was good. Good. Anybody
You've
else?
You've never been deep in your life. All right, who's up? Check. Got it.
Go ahead. So ain't no shivering. Yeah. Lucky me, people that don't with me are linking up with people that don't. Yeah, tribe of millionaires. And every situation is transactional, and everything
they're saying is irrational, and every way they're moving is promotion. Yeah. So you're so talking.
For sure. Absolutely. We talked about being the average of the, you know, top five or top 10 people you surround yourself with, and unfortunately, there's people in our lives that probably don't have our best interests in mind and maybe a little selfish and maybe want to go out to the bar every Thursday night instead of grind and make financial freedom happen for yourself. And those tough decisions on how to limit yourself with the interactions you have with those type of people so you can elevate your average of the people that you surround yourself with.
Bar every Thursday night. That was like, we did that in college. Who goes to bars on Thursday nights?
I think there's adults. Yeah, Shelly does.
Shelly and Dusty, yeah. They live, their house is a bar.
Yeah.
They have probably 500 bottles of liquor at their house, maybe more. Just bourbon. Awesome. All right. So Lucas doesn't think the post. Nobody heard any questions, but Shane's got the mic now. So we'll get a few more of some takeaways from the audience, and then we will get to the top issue. So who has another one that they want to say that was their takeaway? Morgan's got one right now, and then we'll... All right.
So I think one of the most important things that that I always take away from it is just being here, like with the community that we're involved in. I think it's super important to build those connections and just to be one-on-one with people. You know, it's a little bit of a surreal feeling when you're talking to people online and you're getting coaching advice, and then to actually be here in person and know that you guys are real and our coaches are real and, you know, you guys know us. I think that's the biggest takeaway, is having that community and having people to rely on.
Love that.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think we said it several times, but everybody I know that like takes things to the next level is because they're involved in a community that's tough to do on your own. All right, what do we got?
I thought one of the most important things that I found out was, you know, if you care about your tenants, they care about your place.
Yeah, that's a great one. That is one the property management and leasing one was like the biggest hit out of all of them, just because I think people understood how important it is. It's like one of those things where if you buy something and just never manage it, whether it's a house, a business, a stock, and don't like do your due diligence and can see something that's going to happen and change, not get involved. That's exactly like that is. It's tenants are people. You treat them like people. Most of the time, they're going to take care of you and your property.
For me, it was finding your why. I think once you figure that out and once you know why you're doing it and you can focus in on that, there's so much other stuff that can take away from that. But if you find your why, I think that will absolutely lead you in the right direction.
Yeah, I think some of the, you know, for personal fulfillment and satisfaction and happiness, understanding what your why is incredibly important. But if you look at it on the next level, how does this affect your business? I think the most beautiful people and entrepreneurs and businesses that we've seen have very strong leaders, and they are very clear on what their why is. And that's why people buy their product, because they believe in their why, not the product so much. Like if you look at Apple, you know what I mean? Like an Apple phone and an Android phone are pretty
Apple's
similar.
Much better.
But people just believe in the brand of Apple and what they stand for. And that comes from their founder, Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I think that why is huge. We talked a little bit about it, but having a strong why will kind of motivate you when things aren't going well. And then when things are going well, you have another reason to celebrate. You kind of have the people around you that are part of your why you can celebrate with. And then when things are kind of tough, because that happens, yeah, you have some motivation. So having a strong foundational why is, I think it's huge.
Yeah. There'll be
huge, Michelle. It's huge.
There'll be a point in time where all of you guys have
and gals,
I meant guys in
a
general sense,
Lucas.
But, we'll have enough money that you don't know what to do with. And at that point, why are you happy? How is your happiness affected by the amount of money you have? And that comes from focusing on why you do what you do instead of the results that you're getting.
Yeah, if you use money as a vehicle to achieve your why, then you will be happy. But if you think money is your why, then you're never going to be happy, because there's never enough. Cool. Anybody have anything else that they had? If not, we can roll into the... Yep. All right. We got them coming. 3, 2, go.
Creating your own world and like staying in that world and focusing and surrounding yourself with the like-minded people, but not getting shiny object syndrome. I know it's really hard to just stay focused and really just buckle in and really focus on that, and surrounding yourself with those right people too.
Yeah, it's huge. You can, what is the saying? I said, yeah, be careful how you perceive the world, because that's how it is. So yeah, you can create your own world
and
technically.
And the shiny object syndrome is so real in real estate. There's thousands of ways you can make money in real estate. So to understand your passions within real estate, and then go after that and not get distracted until you're expert at that, and then maybe veer off a little bit, is super important. It's going to set you up for success.
I agree. Awesome. All right, so let's get into the top issue. So one of the exercises we did at the end was we had everybody write down their three biggest obstacles that they think are in their way and stopping them from getting to where they want to go. And then that was supposed to be like a 20-minute exercise. It ended up being 45 minutes. The people got into groups and talked and collaborated and really showed the power of community. That part of that purpose of that was, I mean, the groups that I kind of leaned in on and listened to, they were giving way better advice than I would give. So you kind of see the power of the community. So you didn't have to say, oh yeah, Lucas.
That's not surprising.
Okay, got it. Awesome. So let's get into the biggest impact one for me is what I want to get into first. So I want to make sure we have time for it. We were over there and we were saying, what's the biggest thing that's in your way? And you wrote me is what you wrote down. Me, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. So yourself and your mindset can definitely be an obstacle. So I think we'll just dig into that a little bit and try to provide some solutions to help with that.
Yeah, and self-doubt is a common theme that I saw in the groups that I popped around on, and it's pretty in line with mindset as well. We had a gentleman, you know, we talk about like doubting yourself and paralyzes you into not taking action a lot of times. But we had a gentleman that took the action, and then the flip didn't work out very well, but he broke even on the deal. And that experience kind of created some more self-doubt within him. I'm like, how much did you learn on that first deal? And he was like, oh man, I learned so much. And so many things went wrong in this. He had to replace a sewer lateral, had to had termites, had to replumb the entire house. It's probably 25 grand right there. And that's probably the profit on the deal. And he's thinking that's going to happen every single time. So the learning that he was able to achieve and the education he was able to achieve was free for him. And just reframing these learning lessons as well as just that and not failures is a huge part of growing and able to step out of your comfort zone for that next deal.
I think the biggest thing for me on that is that I like to go back to it every few episodes when we can, is that perception and perspective kind of thing. Like the perception of I didn't make any money, losing confidence, but the perspective, taking a step back and taking yourself out of the situation like you did, because you're not in that situation, you got free education, you learned a ton. Most likely all that's not going to happen again. That should build confidence, not lack of confidence. It should build more confidence that a lot went wrong and you didn't lose money.
Yeah, and there's some people in our community that have some amazing things to offer, and they're so humble, almost to a fault sometimes. They don't want to share it because they think they're bragging in a way. I was talking to Greg about the DSCR loan, and he's like, man, we could have financed that deal for you. I was like, well, why didn't you tell me about it? He's like, I didn't want to make this group about that. I'm like, no, man, you have an awesome skill and a gift to share. Let everybody know about that. And the gentleman that lost the house, broke even on that house, is a mayor of Glendale. And I'm like, if you share that, that will help build instant credibility with a lot of these wholesalers. I'm like, that's a really cool thing to share. Be proud of that, and don't be ashamed to share it.
Yeah, I think so. The biggest advice for helping with mindset would be what?
Let's get into that. Like, okay, what are some ways that can help you through that doubt and to change your mindset from a pessimistic mindset to a more optimistic mindset? Sam, what do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. The first thing that pops into my head would be just setting some proper expectations that you're not going to go from struggling mindset to being like, you know, high level mindset in a day. It's something that takes time. It's like exercise. You're not going to go to the gym one time and lose all the weight you want to lose or gain all the muscle you want to gain. It's one of those things you have to consistently work on. It's like relationships. It's like business. It's like anything else. It's a muscle that needs to be worked on and toned and continuous. Not like that, my goodness. But it's a muscle that needs to be worked on. And I think having that expectation that it's not going to happen quickly and that it's going to be hard work, but it's going to happen, is the biggest thing, you know, because if you think it's going to happen overnight and it doesn't, you're disappointed and you lose the confidence and you, not saying you give up, but maybe. But if you understand, 6 months from now, I'm going to be, you know, better than I am right now. 1 month from now, I'm going to be 5% better. Just having that expectation, I think, sets you up for a lot more success and less failure.
Yeah. In like a perfect theoretical world, It works like this to me. You believe first, and then the result. That doesn't work when I do that. But then the results come after you believe. But sometimes it's hard to believe 100% until you have some proof that it's working along the way. So how do you know that it's working along the way? And a more tactful approach to that would be to focus on leading indicators and not the results. You cannot control the results. You can influence them, but you can't control results. What you control is right now and what you do. So if you set yourself up for benchmarks for leading indicators, like how many calls am I making today? How many leads did I receive? How many offers am I making? How many, you know, stuff like that, is controllable, that you can have these micro wins along the way until you truly, truly believe in yourself 100%.
Yeah, the last thing I want to say on that, and you can wrap it up, we can move on to the next one, is just gaining some understanding as to why your mindset's where it's at. We talked a lot about, you know, childhood trauma, maybe just childhood influences, I would say, having parents that were bottom liners is what we said. You know, they always worried about the bottom line, worried about saving money, buying the off-brand everything so you can save money, not going out to eat, doing all these things and just focusing on the bottom line versus focusing on the top line of making more money, because what you focus on is going to expand. So if you focus on the bottom line and that's all you care about, that's all that's going to expand and that's going to take over your whole mind. But if you focus on, rather than trying to cut $500 out of my budget every single month, can I do something to make $500 more? Mm-hmm. And you just shift it towards that, and you understand that it all, you know, started probably from something in your childhood, and just grasping the source of it and then trying to fix it from there, I think is big. Because I had no childhood trauma by any means, but my parents were very, very frugal and very, very, can't afford this, can't afford that, saving money. They were pretty bottom liners, and just switching to, you know, focus on the top line. And you can talk about how we do in business as well. But
yeah, I think trauma is, you know, it's a pretty aggressive word, right? And it comes in all shapes and sizes and impacts who we are as a person. It could be something as simple as, you know, your parents or grandparents or whoever was, you know, raised you saying, you know, had it in my head, like, you're so spoiled or something like that, or just like constantly saying little things like that, that you believe when you grow up that I don't deserve certain things. You know what I mean? And that's just not true. You deserve anything you want in this life. And then also another way to kind of go through those mindset issues is just to take some of the pressure off yourself, I think, and just start like shifting into, hey, this is just fun. I'm okay. I have everything I need. And it starts with a gratitude journal of some point. Just, hey, I have this. I'm grateful for a reliable vehicle, a roof over my head. Just the little things to kind of start shifting your mindset from, depressed to happy. And then everything on top of that is just icing on the cake and just becomes fun. And if it is fun, then better results come from that.
Do you have a gratitude journal?
I do, yeah.
Who in here has a gratitude journal? Raise your hand. Few people. Nobody can. There's no camera on you guys, so you're good. Who does not have a gratitude journal? Yeah, about half and half. So yeah, I think there's different ways to do it. There's different ways to do it for sure. So yeah, I think having a journal will help, but if you can be intentional every day and think about it, at least that helps as well.
I have mine. I almost want to run over and go read it.
You can't run, but you can walk over there.
Yeah.
You'll hurt yourself.
No.
Dusty, go get it. Cool. So while Dusty's doing that, yeah, I think to round that out, I think my biggest things are having the right expectation and then understanding it, that it's going to, understand the source of it, understand it's going to take some time, and it's something that needs to be worked on. So are we going to get what you're gratitudinal for?
Yeah, not the big zipper, but the second zipper to the back. There's a red journal.
Maybe just bring the whole thing?
Yep.
Oh, there it is. All right, we're getting ready to get inside Lucas's
gratitude
journal.
Just the basics too, like, get some sunlight, get some exercise. It doesn't have to be anything crazy.
Lucas is a kind of a hippie, you guys didn't know that.
Start today journal is what I call it. I'm going to go back. This is from 2019. Oh, my gosh.
You've been doing this shit for 5 years?
Yeah. Man, it looks like I was on the beach, so a lot to be grateful for.
Was it the water and the...
Today, I'm grateful for the ocean view and breeze, safe travels, family... Drake getting plenty of exercise, which is my son, and then fish tacos.
There you go.
And then
who else is grateful for fish tacos? Yeah, everybody is.
And then I also write down, 10 dreams I made come true. And I say it that way because it's going to happen.
So this is 5 years ago you wrote this.
2019.
Okay.
We own a beach house. And it still hasn't come true.
You almost did this year.
Almost did. Could have, but
you could have this year.
To.
Yeah, you could have.
A successful nonprofit organization.
That's crushed.
1 million cash in bank account.
There you go.
$50 million of real estate assets.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, okay. That happened.
Drake is happy, active, and kind.
That happened as well.
Yep. Debt-free, I think that was from a personal level. That happened as well. $30,000 a month in passive income. That
there
happened
you go.
As
you,
well.
Yeah.
Excellent relationship with Ash and kids, and 100%. This is one of my on my vision statement. 100% in charge of my money, time, and happiness.
Cool. There you go. The clap. Yeah, Lucas. When's the last time you looked at that?
This is in December of 2019. I'm grateful for four-wheel drive because it probably snowed that day. holiday parties, awesome property management candidates, family health, and a flexible schedule.
There you go. So yeah. It can be a lot of different ways you can go about it, but it's just writing down what you're grateful for. So that's wild that you've done that.
Yeah, this is cool. This is fun to see.
Do you want me to finish this? You can go read that in the corner.
Yeah, I'm done. Cool.
All right, cool. That is fun, Luke. That's awesome. So just along those lines, before we move on to the next topic, we had our team almost a year ago now, and mine's the 15th. We did our vision statement. I did my vision statement 5/15/2023, and it's on my next to my mirror in my bathroom, and then it's next to my desk upstairs. So similar thing, writing down what you want to accomplish and just have visualizing. I don't think we have much on visualization, but it kind of fits under mindset.
Yep, it does.
Cool. All right, so the next topic we had was money. That was a big obstacle for a lot of people, and I know you presented on that, so I'll let you kick it off, Lucas. But mindset can play into this a little bit as well, but money is an obstacle for people to invest in real estate. I get that 100%. So let's talk about some solutions for that.
Yeah, and it's an easy one to pinpoint because it's pretty much the first step in my eyes. Like before you go find contractors, before you build a team, before you even find a deal, you got to figure out, you got to have your money lined up so you can make those no contingency offers. It just makes you so much more powerful. We talked about how much money there truly is in our economy and how much there is out there. And it's a lot. So a lot of people have money and a lot of people want to invest in real estate or lend on real estate, whatever you want to call it. They don't want to be 100% reliant on their 401k or their IRA and just having all the money in the stock market. This is a nice way for people to diversify. And our favorite type of money is private lenders. Obviously, there you can buy real estate with other types of funding, hard money real lenders, local banks, creative finance, all that type of stuff.
Cash.
But private money lenders is what changed our business and allowed us to be as dangerous as we are today in a good way. Not like we're going to hurt anybody, but
was you about 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, it was. But I'm kind now.
You are.
I'm gentle.
Okay.
Way. All right. Anyway, so focusing on private lenders first, I think, is the right thing to do. And understanding who to go after, who to target, and just be open and willing to talk about your goals and ask for something when it's the right time. These private lenders aren't people in suits that work for Wall Street or whatever. They're your neighbors. They're your normal people. They're your parents' friends or your coworkers or your doctor, whoever it is. Just be open to talking about your dreams and investing in real estate. And if they lean in a little bit and have some interest, then have some sort of 60 second elevator pitch to garner some more interest, and then set up a separate meeting to close the deal.
So pick your moments. So like if you're at your doctor's office, they say lean or
your knee hurts
cough or something like that. Oh, be like, all right, I'll do that, doc, if you listen to my pitch. How about that?
You were about to say bend over and cough.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Is that what that I don't, that's what happens at some doctors. Not
well, yeah, what doctors
well,
you going
I
to?
Think that happens when you get old. I don't
that's
I just
that holistic
seen,
approach.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that and like I haven't had to do that yet, but that's a process. Yeah, that's so that
you
does
got
happen.
You got a few years.
Yeah, so I got some years. So that's when you bring that up after that at the doctor. No. I think you hit on it and I just want to hammer it a little bit further is knowing who real private lenders are. Mm-hmm. Our private lenders are like insurance agents, engineer, just like normal W-2 corporate employees. The typical best private lender is a conservative investor. It's not somebody that's taking money out of crypto or somebody that has a ton of cash. It's somebody that has an IRA. They can self-direct. That's usually the top one. A 401k, you know, a home equity line of credit. Their kids are in high school. They've lived in the same house for 20 years. They got 300 grand equity they can pull out. So it's just normal everyday people. Those, there are abundance of them. And those are the people that are willing to do it because you have a relationship. It's not somebody with 10 million bucks in the bank. Those people aren't worried about 10% return.
Yeah. And just understanding that it's a win-win situation.
It's more, not more beneficial for them, but it's very, very beneficial for them. They're not going to get a basically collateral-backed, insured, personal guaranteed 12% return anywhere else.
Yeah, and treat it that way. Don't be begging for money. Be like, if you don't lend on this deal, you're missing out on $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't say it's guaranteed, but what we can say is we got 100% payment history. Mm-hmm. That's something you can say. And if you've done one deal, you got 100% payment history.
We've done hundreds, but we have thousands, but we have 100% payment history. Yep. So yeah, you can pretty much say it's guaranteed. Yeah. Anything else on money?
Yeah. It's not that money's the issue. It's usually not. Understanding of it and where to go get it, how to utilize it, and your education around it.
Having the persistence. It took us a while to find our first one, and to think that you're going to have two conversations and find a private lender. Again, a lot of what I have noticed with people that are successful is just having the right expectations, knowing that you're going to get a private lender, but it's going to take you 3-4 months, yeah. Not 3-4 days, and not 3-4 conversations, yeah. Will allow you to say, I'm 2 months in, haven't found one. Great. I'm halfway there, rather, yeah. than I still haven't found one. It's one of those things.
After the first deal is the hardest. It's the hardest to line up the money. It's the hardest to find the deal. It's the hardest to rehab. But once you have that first one under your belt, everything starts to fall into place. Whether, you know, you build trust with that initial private lender or hard money lender, and then you can increase guidance limits with them. So they'll give you more money so you can do multiple deals at once. But then you have proof of concept that you can show another private lender or another hard money lending company. So it just continues to compound and grow.
Yeah. And two things happen. One, they usually tell their friends about it because you're the mean of the 5 people or 10 people you hang around. So usually a working class person close to retirement hangs out with other working class people close to retirement that will lend you money. That's one thing. And then I think every private lender we've ever used has increased their guidance limit, yep. with us. So but every single private lender we've used, and we probably use 20 or 25, every single one has given us more of a guidance limit after you prove yourself. So it's one of those things, they'll push it to their friends because everybody likes to hang out at, you know, doing whatever golf course or whatever they're doing and talk about, hey, I got these guys I invest with, I've made this much money on them. They're great. Like, people like to brag about themselves and what they invest in.
For sure.
Cool. All right. The next one is deals.
Deals. Challenge.
It can be, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it is a challenge.
It is.
It's not easy. Simple, but not easy. We, yep. all kind of know what to do, but okay, so creating deal flow. You know, what does that mean, and what's the importance behind it? So where I see people get caught up in creating deal flow, number one, it's just a numbers game. You have to have so many deals come across your plate to get one, and it's probably at least 10. At least, if not more, from a deal perspective, probably 10 offers to one contract, give or take. So if you want to buy one deal a quarter, man, you got to be looking at, 50 deals probably.
Yeah, so you're looking at, several deals a week, put it that way.
And that doesn't necessarily mean you go to all these, but if someone sends you a deal that's close or in the ballpark, right? And you're going to lose out on some. That's all right. Just keep making offers. And I guess where I see people flounder a little bit is there's hundreds of different ways to come across a distressed property, and people don't know what is their niche. And I think it's important to have a niche or two or three, but if you're trying to do 10 things, it's going to be very hard to get good at them. Like, if you're trying to do driving for dollars good, trying to network with probate attorneys, real estate agents, wholesalers, direct mail, Facebook marketing, whatever it is, trying to get good at all those things is nearly impossible. Get good at one thing first and then build on that and maybe try another channel after that.
And we have a company that's full-time job is to get deals. And
we have 5 channels.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Five, we have 5 channels as we
that's
focus
it.
On. We have the ability and resources to do more if we wanted, but we want to get really good at those 5 channels.
Yep.
And we're still not even all good at all 5 of them.
Yeah.
PPC struggles a little bit. Yeah. So let's talk about some ways to source deals for new investors. So front conversation, the people that I was talking to left a little bit, but we were talking, she's like, I don't want a cold call or cold text or go into a house that's distressed that has all the beer cans that Dusty's picture had. And I'm uncomfortable in that situation. And I was like, that's fine. Just find the people that are comfortable in those situations. So find the wholesalers, find the people that what they do is they knock on doors. They drive for dollars. They cold call. They go into those situations. They do all the work for you. Everything was done for you. You get look at pictures and a price, and you decide to buy it or not, and you can negotiate if you want. And you got to do due diligence, but find the people that find the deals if you don't want to go source them, because it takes a lot of time, and it is a special skill set to walk into a house with somebody that, you know, just lost a parent and inherited the house, and, you know, the house is a mess. It can be very sticky situations, and I understand why a lot of people don't want to be in those situations.
For sure. Yeah. And I think it goes back to what your goals are. If, you know, if you don't care if you buy a house for the next 6 months, you know, I think there's some channels there that you can develop and nurture long-term relationships. And I would consider that like probate attorneys and maybe the senior living niche as well. Those are long plays. You're not going to buy a house in a month from either of those, more than likely. If you're trying to buy your first house in a month, to me, it's 100% wholesalers, 100%. And, you know, how would you stay on top of mind of wholesalers to let them know you're serious, let them know you're interested and ready, let them know that you're ready to buy now?
Yeah, so I would, you know, contact several wholesalers, and you're not going to have 30 that you're going to continually be in contact with, but I would try to get 25 or 30 wholesalers through a few different channels. The Bane of signs you see on the side of the road, those are all wholesalers. Snap a picture of that, text them, ask them to put on their buyer's list. And we did it up front. I said, type in their phone, type in sell my house fast for cash St. Louis, and us and Core and several companies popped up. I said, call those companies that we're going to wholesale probably over 200 houses this year. And Jen's bought four from us, and she's hopefully done well on all of them. So good wholesalers know how much meat to leave on the table. We make $30,000 from wholesale. Some wholesales we lose money, some wholesales we make $1,000. It's not about how much we want to make, it's how much the market will, you know, how much we get it below what we can sell it for. So most good wholesalers are going to leave enough meat on the bone. So contact through, you know, Google, through, you know, Bandit Signs, go to local meetups, Facebook groups, and just get 20 or 30 of them. You're not going to be friends with 20 or 30 of them, but the five or six you become friends with, that could be five or six deals a year minimum. I have a rule of thumb, Lucas. I'll see what you think about it. I tell people if they're looking to buy 10 houses or less in a year, I don't think they need to spend any money on marketing. I think they can source that through wholesalers, real estate agents, and connectors.
Yeah. And I like that 25 to 30 wholesalers. And in our market, that's super easy to do, to find those. To me, it's how you utilize those and how you stay top of mind of those wholesalers. And
yeah, I didn't answer that part of your question, but you can.
That's all right. Yeah. So you know, a lot of these wholesalers, getting on their buyer's list is a great way to get your foot in the door and to analyze properties that come across, that get blasted out. It's a great way to learn and go through the process. Is this a deal? Is this not a deal? This is what I would pay for it. And it's fine to buy houses from blasts, but the goal in my mind would be to, when that wholesaler gets a property under contract, you're one of the first in your buy box, you're one of the first person that they think about. And how do you do that? You got to stay top of mind with these people. I would set up some sort of recurring reach out, whether it's, you know, an email 1 week, a text the next week, a phone call the next week, a coffee the next week, and then just complete that. If you do that the first month, every week, you're going to buy a house.
You're
going to
get a lot of leads at minimum.
Yeah. And then just keep up with that and create, and then you'll figure out who you want to actually work with and niche. Narrow those wholesalers down to, you know, maybe 5 or 10. We had one wholesaler when we were buying strictly, you know, fix and flips and burr deals, that we bought 8 houses in 1 year from. I was talking to another guy back there. I was like, the very first house that he showed me, there was about 8 other investors, you know, the whole dog and pony show that some of these wholesalers do. We do it every once in a while too. It just, you know, it is what it is. But I walked right in that house. I did all my research ahead of time. I knew exactly what I wanted to pay for it if the rehab was X, Y, or Z. So I figured up the rehab real quick outside on a napkin probably. And then I wrote in the contract and handed him the contract in front of the 8 investors.
And you bought the house.
Yeah, bought the house. We still own it to this day. And we stood out from the crowd that way. So find a way to stand out and keep on top of mind. And there's no better way to stay on top of mind of wholesalers than doing deals.
Yep. I like that. So we're on like episode like 160, 170. So what?
It's probably 180 now.
180.
Yeah, 179, 180.
So for the 50th episode, Lucas wrapped. For the
hot fire.
Yeah. On the 100th episode, I wrapped. So do you think we should on the 200th episode both do a dual wrap?
Yes, that was my idea, Sam.
Okay.
I think
I'm asking them, not you.
Okay, well, don't look at me. Yeah.
Do you guys think we should wrap on the 200th episode?
Yeah.
Okay. Lucas was a rapper in college. I was not, which you can tell by listening to his rap.
We did some rapping. Like, we, our definition of a night out would be to drink a 12-pack of beer on a Friday night and open my laptop and record us trying to rap in front of it.
We did that a few times. Just the big one I remember, remember-ish, was we drank that bottle of vodka on Monday night, and we recorded that one rap. Yeah, that was fun.
I think we made like 3 songs. They're probably famous by now.
If I think they're on your computer that you can't get access. I hope we can never see them again.
That would be bad. Yeah, that would not be good. Everybody involved.
Yeah, it wasn't good. That's called turbulence. I do that. Well, explain what turbulence is.
Yeah, turbulence is just when we go off on a complete tangent to the actual topic. Yeah.
Usually led by me, yeah. Almost always. All right, cool. All right, the next thing we have is contractors. Contractors can be tough to find for sure. So the biggest piece of advice I have for finding good contractors is going to local meetups, and the good contractors that like to work with investors will 100% be there, and then branching out from that. If you go to a local meetup and you find a really good roofer, and you treat them well and pay them well, and you use their time and communicate properly, they probably know a good siding person. And that siding person probably knows a good window person. That window person probably knows a good drywaller. That drywaller knows a good flooring person. So you can go down that line. But if you go to that roofer and you toy with them and you don't, communicate properly and you don't get back to them, you don't pay them on time, they're not gonna reference you to their good contractors that they know, because it's a smaller industry. Contractors that like to work with investors, and you're the sum of the people you hang around, like we said earlier. So going out to meetups and then treating one contractor really well and then asking for referrals after you treat them well, I think, is my biggest piece of advice on that one.
Yeah, and I think it kind of depends on your investment strategy and what type of rehabs you are doing. I guess, Tim, it's been hard to find, say you're doing $20,000 to $50,000 rehabs.
You're doing $20,000 to $50,000
rehab. Thank you, in which we are. Some... 250, but
Dusty, only how much over budget did you go on that one? I don't know what everyone's talking about. I don't know any houses we buy. You know that
we're not there yet. We're still in the middle of it.
Oh, okay, how much are you going to go over budget?
Nothing.
Oh,
yeah, right on the nails. Yeah,
I'll keep an eye on it. Okay,
but I guess I've had, and I don't know. You can chime in on this too, Dusty. I think it's harder to find. When it's those $20,000 to $50,000 rehabs, a lot of times it's the same person or small crew that does everything in the house. They do the flooring, do the painting, they do the lighting. Once you get above that in a more like in-depth rehab, you got trades coming in and stuff like that. Then you're a true project manager at that point, managing schedules and more budgets instead of just one bid from one guy. But so to do those lighter rehabs with one guy knocking it out, I love those. You just got to make sure it's not like something you got to pull a permit for or anything like that. But those are the people that are super hard to find in my eyes. If we wanted to go find an electrician or a roofer, I think we could find that a little easier than a full service crew personally. So a lot of times investors, I want to get your thoughts on this or Dusty's, investors have those people and want to hold them very close to the chest. And we were one of them. I'm okay with saying that. Those are the contractors that I just don't like giving to everybody, right? So how could you, as a newer investor, maybe figure out a way to utilize those or pull those away? Would you be willing to pay like a small referral fee or something like that? Or what do you think?
I mean, I would. I think the biggest issue with us holding them close to the vest and other people is just making sure they have time for your projects. It's not necessarily pay me money to talk to them. But I think what you can do is do what we've been harping on for 2 days, is develop a community. Like when people, we get to know them very well, we're very likely to, just refer out Jose or whoever. But when we don't know them, we usually don't refer them out. So I think if we know them and Dusty gets to know him very well, then he'll gladly refer one of our top contractors out. But we're not just going to meet you, shake your hand for the first time and give you our aces in the hole. But if you get to know us and develop a community and hang around and provide value, then we'll gladly open it up, because most of our contractors have enough ability to work with other people. Now, we try to make it clear, we provide a lot of business to them that prioritize, but as long as they can get our stuff done, we're glad to refer them out.
Nice. What are your thoughts on timing of when to look for new contractors, specifically for newer investors. Would you start looking for contractors before you have your first deal, or would you kind of just let the deal dictate how hard and when you look for new contractors?
That's a good one. I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer. I would, you know, preferably say do it ahead of time, but that's a lot. If you're trying to find deals, you're trying to find money, you don't want to waste their time, because if you have, you know, talk to them and send them several deals before you even get one and they don't end up getting the work, even though they give you bids, that can get kind of annoying. So I would say just kind of have general conversations and have their phone numbers and just have, you know they'll know who you are when you make the phone call is probably enough. I don't think you want to do overkill. What do you think?
I like that a lot.
Cool. All right. The next one is lack of, it looks like it says lack of fences,
focus.
But it's focus. I don't write very well. So why don't you talk about lack of focus, Lucas? That was one you mentioned.
Well, we talked about that a little bit, right? Just like so many different ways to make money.
Shiny object syndrome. Yeah.
Shiny object syndrome. You know, we're talking about wholesaling. We're talking about fix and flipping, and you should do this first. Not should, but maybe you should do this first, or rentals, or MTRs, creative financing, buying notes, multifamily, sub two. Like, there's so much stuff, and I think just figuring out one particular lane first is super beneficial, and kind of let your passion dictate that, your cash position, and then also just the market as well. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the biggest thing I always tell people is your long-term goals and cash position. That's why you were alluding to. If you need cash now, wholesaling is your best option. If you want cash later, flipping is your best option. Yeah. If you're good on those and the market dictates it, then add rentals. There's no reason why, if you're making a good salary and you enjoy your job and you have enough freedom, that you should start to flip just to have money in the bank extra. If you already have money in the bank, you just let that decide. And if you need cash now or want to get out of bad debt, then rentals aren't going to do it. But if you're set in those situations, then adding rentals as much as you can as quickly as possible, because it's going to double in 15 years. So if you wait 5 years to buy it, it's not going to double for 20 years. But if you buy it now, it'll double in 15 years.
Yeah, and protect all that income you're earning from wholesaling and flipping, right?
Yes, that's been very beneficial for us. We've taken very full advantage of the tax laws of mainly owning rental properties and not having to pay much taxes.
Yeah, I like the skill set approach too. I think, I'm not a person, my skill set, I wouldn't love strictly wholesaling. You know, I'm not super marketing and sales focused. So I don't mind talking to sellers every once in a while. But to do it every single day is just not my strongest skill set, I would say, or my passion. So if I were to start over, I probably would not wholesale. Deal flow in general is important, but direct to seller marketing is not the only way to get that. So I would focus on building relationships with wholesalers and agents to get some sort of deal flow or lead flow, and then really focusing on fix and flips and processes and project management. I think that's where my strong set, my skill set would come into play the best.
I would agree with that. I think that's a good way to put it. If somebody's like naturally a good wholesaler, they can do other things, but lean on that.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right. The last one is time. Lack of time. That's tough, because everybody has different amounts of money and credit and all these things, but we all have 24 hours in a day, so trying to maximize that time. So do you have any opening thoughts on this one?
Opening thoughts on time.
Yep.
Yeah.
You never thought you could ask that question, huh?
Yeah. It's, we could get deep with this and talk like Einstein time.
Okay. Time's like relative.
Time's relative, and we create our own time. We could be wild with that.
But, you're so crazy.
I am wild. To me, it comes down to just prioritizing what's important to you. And then this comes back to creating a vision for yourself. And something that you're doing right now that doesn't align with your vision and support your vision, you probably shouldn't be doing it. Mm-hmm. I go back to most times sucks that pull us away from our true vision and our dreams come from some sort of entertainment or numbing of some sort. And
old TikTok scroll.
The old TikTok doom scroll, right? Mm-hmm. Doom loop. It comes in a lot of different shapes and sizes. But once you're clear in your vision, you understand the things that support that versus don't, and then stop spending time on those things that don't.
Have the discipline. Yeah. I think a big thing, and this is speaking to the choir here, is buying somebody else's already inefficient time to make your time efficient. That's, you know, the community members are here.
Yeah.
They are much more efficient because they have our systems and processes and people to lean on. Like, they could probably do it on their own. Most of you probably, but I'm very confident that it would take you longer and you would be more frustrated and you would not make as much progress. So buying somebody else's knowledge and time, I think, is huge. I like to say that our goal is to help you use your limited time efficiently so that you eventually have, stop making fun of me, Michelle, that you have unlimited spare time, because you want to have some time for some of those fun things. You want to be able to enjoy your family and enjoy your hobbies and go on vacation. You don't want to have to work 50 hours a week at your job and then 40 hours a week at your side hustle. So if you could work 50 hours a week at your job and we can help you get 30 hours work of, you know, work efficiently done in 10 hours, you're going to do more. So I think that's speaking to the choir here, but, you know, buying somebody else's processes and systems and community and focus to help you be more efficient is, it's the only way I know to buy time. Cause I think you can to a certain degree, rather than just trying it on your own and being super inefficient and frustrated.
Yeah. If you're not where you want to be, you're going to have to, I don't want to say sacrifice, but you're going to have to stop doing something in your life.
Yes.
So you got to prioritize what's most important in your life. Number one, it's your own self. If you don't take care of yourself, then everything else is going to fall to shit anyway. So, you know,
the little kid's gone, you can cuss again.
Oh, I don't think that mattered.
Yeah, Mike did throw the F-bomb. Getting trash can ready, Shane or Gainer?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Shane anyway.
Oh, no, Shane. Oh, Shane is kind of...
Don't curse in front of Shane.
Yes, but, he will judge you.
So it starts with taking care of yourself. So when does that happen? Say you want to do that in the morning. So you wake up early, you get a walk in, you get a run in, you get a lift in, whatever that looks like. You drink a bunch of water, you meditate or you journal or something to get your mind and your body ready for the day. Then maybe you kiss your kids for, you know, a couple minutes before. Hang out with them for an hour or so before they go to school and you go to your 9-to-5. You go to your 9-to-5, take a 3-hour lunch break like I used to do.
Yes,
go look
did.
At properties, go manage your properties, check in on construction. Not in all serious, you know, take your lunch break and do some stuff on your lunch break, maybe not 3 hours. But then you get home and you got, you know, some time with your family as well. You want to spend time with your family from 5 to 8. But to me, it's what you do, you know, after those kids go down to sleep. You can watch Netflix for the rest of the night.
Watch the third episode of Bachelor.
If that supports your vision, great, do it. If it's not aligned with your vision and who you want to be and what you want to become, you might have to cross it out and get to work from 8 to 10, 8 to 11, whatever that looks like, and carve out some time to create this life that you really want. I don't know. What are your thoughts
discipline,
on that?
Discipline to live your priorities. I think getting the priorities straight and then have the discipline to live through them. Yeah. We talk a lot about this. It's, you don't have to completely change everything. You don't have to get up 2 hours earlier and do affirmations and meditation. You can, but you just have to start to carve out some time and start to put your priorities rather than watching that third episode of Bridgerton. Maybe watch one and spend an hour, hour and a half learning something, watching videos, breaking down some properties. And, you know, rather than, you know, if you're on your way to your kid's soccer game, you know, maybe a little bit before, a little bit after, go check on a property, or, you know, spend an extra 10 minutes on your way to or from work driving for dollars. You just have to start to do a few things that will gain momentum. Again, the people that are thinking they have to go from what they're doing to 30 hours of doing something else, that's not realistic. Start to carve it out, I think, is big.
And it's a lot easier if it's just you and you don't have a family yet. You get to do what you want. But if you got a family, got a significant other, got some kids, you're going to have to get them on board with your dreams and paint this picture of what this could look like if we hustle and grind and put in the work over the next few years, and get them on board. So when you do drag them to a rehab, they're okay with it. You know, post soccer game, go check on a rehab on the weekend. Some, just little stuff like that. Create a lifestyle of it and just enjoy it.
Get more buy-in. I like it. Yeah. Awesome. All right, we're going to have you guys put your hands together one more time for Freedom Fest. All right, now you get to be embarrassed in front of everybody, because we're going to, if you don't listen to our podcast, we shoot the outlines in the trash can every single episode. We are tied because I purposely missed last episode, so we are tied right now. But this is about 3 times as far as we usually throw it, so we're going to...
I don't even see the trash
can. It's right there in the middle.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we're going to make it interesting.
Look at this outline we have for this
That's my outline. You guys see my outline? Isn't that good? So we're going to go ahead and shoot in the trash can before we get to the outro. Lucas, as always, you got to go first.
Can we stand up? Or
yes,
do we
you
sit
stand
down?
Up, sit at the end for sure. Stand up at the end. That's you going to stand
How
up?
How does this thing fly? Let's do a little test. Okay, this is the line, let's say.
Sure. All right, he'll see what he's got. Yeah, I think you're... I hope he doesn't make it. Good. All right, okay. So you threw pretty hard. It did not. So I just know I got to put something behind it. No cheating, Dustin. All right, here we go.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the rim. Damn it.
You.
Yeah. All right, thanks for watching, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. We hope you got some major value from our conversation. If you love what you learn, make sure you like, rate, review the show, and help us spread the word by telling a friend.
If you'd like to learn more about working with me inside one of my programs, we'll have those links in the show notes, along with all our social media handles, so you connect with us there for free. If there's a real estate question you'd like us to answer, feel free to send us a message, and we'll cover it in an upcoming show.